Okay, so the bad news is that I'm not an engineer, but the good news is for you to decide. There are a lot of words in this title that I would like to cover before I dive in. The title is Music Kiosk, that's the name of our project, and the subtitle, An Urban Soundscape Intervention and Evaluation in a Public Park. So here are some definitions. Soundscape has been recently defined by the ISO, the International Standards Organization, as the acoustic environment as perceived and understood and or experienced by people and or society in context. There are a lot of subparts to this definition, and I'll dive into that more later once I describe what the project is about. Next, the word intervention was used. Intervention is a word that we're borrowing from architecture, meaning that we're actually changing something in the urban space. And when I say urban for this project, I mean that we're doing a change in the human-built environment. And last, we'll be doing a soundscape evaluation, so that includes not only computational evaluations, but it will incorporate human judgments on top of that. So these are all of the things that are meant by the title of this talk. So I'd like to describe a place here in the city that you're visiting, Montreal. This is called the Parc du Portugal, and there's a gazebo in the middle of this park. And we had an idea for this gazebo. The idea is a musical idea, and this gazebo is generally not so heavily used. So we wondered what we could do to change the gazebo and to make people want to use it. Respecting Montreal's history as a musical city, and the fact that people in the summertime like to go out and do lots of things, for example, tango in the park, we thought we could incorporate music into our intervention. Music is also a historic function of the gazebo in general, so we thought we could respect that as well. What you're looking at is a photo from Pop Montreal, a famous music festival that takes place in a different gazebo in a different park. But if we go back to our park, we notice that there's also a surrounding context that's very musical and cultural. And it's the center of the Portuguese neighborhood, and there's really music all over this park. For example, facing the gazebo is the famous Leonard Cohen House. So Leonard Cohen lived here when he was writing his music in Montreal. There's also the famous La Divan Orange. This is a nightclub where many visiting artists come through and do their performances. So we thought we'd take all of these musical contexts and the musical history of the gazebo and do a musical soundscape intervention and incorporate a research project into that. So here's the idea. We start with an empty gazebo and we put in some speakers. People can come and they take, we provide a public-facing audio jack connected to these speakers. People can come with any sort of audio device that they wish and hook into that public audio jack, and then they can come and do an activity associated with the content that they're playing over these speakers. And to incorporate the research, we would install a microphone to do environmental monitoring. So what is this system affording? Well, it's an unsupervised public-facing audio input. So people walk up and they plug in whatever they want, an iPod, a guitar, a microphone, and they can play their own content any way they wish. It's meant for amplifying the things I said, but we also want to leave room for something creative. So somebody could bring a mixing console or something we've never seen before and try it out, as long as it uses a stereo audio jack. The purpose of this installation is actually for small and intimate gatherings. So it's actually not a performance venue. We're not giving people a spontaneous, unsupervised performance venue. It's meant for people to use in rather small groups, intimate groups. So we're hoping for things like new music compositions that will arise, some spontaneous dance sessions, music rehearsals, yoga or meditation, somebody bringing a picnic, or somebody trying something totally new. And we hope to capture all of these things with our soundscape evaluation. So, of course, we had to implement some system rules to make the city happy, to make the idea cohesive and coherent. So one of our ideas is that the sound of the music kiosk, or the levels of the music kiosk, would not be emergent above the traffic noise at a distance of 10 meters from the gazebo. So somebody who is standing 10 meters from the gazebo, it would be audible to them if somebody were playing content, but it would not be emergent above the traffic noise. The levels will be lower or off at night times and other important times. We just got word from the city on our permit last week that we have to close at 10 p.m. each night, which is quite late. But Montreal has a general quiet hour time of about 11 o'clock, so this fits in pretty well with the local context. Users can turn the level of Music Kiosk up, but they can't turn it down. Approved events, which will be registered to us in advance, will get access to higher levels, so they could do something more like a performance. There will also be full-time monitoring from our microphones. Now, we're not exactly using these microphones to do full-time recording in the park, because that would be a violation of the ethics. So we are primarily storing metadata about the acoustic signal in the form of LEQs, and I'll explain more the metadata later. But we do periodic recordings of the WAV file to get other into a form of a WAV file to get other information. And once the system is installed, we'll sort of change the system around a little bit to adapt to early evaluations. The system itself is contained in two aluminum boxes, a brain box and an interface box. And next to the interface box will be some instructions for the public that shows up to use it. The public will have two ways to play their content over the music kiosk. They can plug into the wireless system using the audio jack, or they can connect via Bluetooth. One of the reasons we did this was in case anyone comes and vandalizes the wired connection, the system will still work because it's all hidden up in the ceiling. We're splitting a stereo signal over four speakers that will play downward-facing studio monitors within the gazebo. We've chosen the Behringer MS-16 speakers, and they will be shielded by some perforated metal panels. We've made use of a Raspberry Pi and a Wolfson sound card, and the environmental microphone is plugged in via the headset input. So here's a diagram where we show that So this is the Bluetooth connection, but then we also have the physical connection. People who use the physical connection have access to an extra volume knob in case whatever device they come with doesn't have one. And then all contained on our Raspberry Pi, we have the microphone input as well. Here's what our volume knob and cables look like, and here's everything deployed on the system. So it's actually, besides the speakers, it's actually quite small. And because this is going into a real space, we had some design challenges. For example, the city's allowing us to install this, but they told us we're not allowed to make any holes in this gazebo. So this is what the ceiling looks like, and we have to figure out how to suspend four speakers in this space. So we're using safety nets and safety wires and finding very small holes in the ceiling of the gazebo here. So as I mentioned, there are two audio streams. There's a playback stream and a monitoring stream. The playback stream uses Bluetooth and line in, and we do some equalization based on the time of day and whether or not the microphone is telling us that we are emergent above the background signal. And the monitoring stream is taking some acoustic indicators for us. So what is the microphone recording exactly? We're doing a full-time analysis of LEQs at 1 second, A-weighted EQs and C-weighted LEQs, and these are all over 1 second. And from just those values, we can calculate a lot of other acoustic indicators. At certain points that are triggered by certain events, we take a recording in the duration of 10 seconds. This happens when somebody connects a new device. We take a 10-second recording. What we hope to gain from that is an understanding of, like, for example, what musical genre people are playing in the gazebo. And during high peak incidents, so something very noisy happens in the park, then we trigger another 10-second recording and try to figure out exactly what has happened to cause such a high-level incident. And then we also do 10-second periodic recordings. Every 20 minutes, we just take a random 10-second recording. And this is for us to calculate the acoustic indicators that we aren't able to calculate from the LEQ, and so we can get some frequency domain information. When it comes to acoustic indicators that are being used for soundscape, this is actually a big field right now, trying to figure out which acoustic indicators map the best to human evaluations. There are two types. We have energy acoustic indicators, and we have event-based acoustic indicators. In terms of energy, we have the LEQ that I've already mentioned, and we can expand the duration of that LEQ. So we can expand it to 5, 10, 50, or 90 minutes, or really any time. But these four are the big ones, used by acousticians, for example, that work for the city. There's also one called the Traffic Noise Index, which attempts to predict the annoyance that people would experience based on the traffic. We also have what are called these event-based indicators. We calculate the number of noise events that rise above a certain threshold. So say we set the threshold at 75 decibels, this will count the number of noise events that pass above that threshold. And this could tell us about perhaps the eventfulness of the soundscape. There's another one called the mask index, which tries to tell us the amount of time that the signal spends above a particular threshold. And then we have the acoustic indicator called the slope, which tries to measure how periodically something is passing above emerging above the background noise. So for example, if there's a traffic light at our park and the cars are regularly stopping at a red light and then moving when the light turns green, that will show up in this indicator called the slope, because something will be happening at regular or periodic intervals. So we hope to capture a lot of these acoustic indicators and then compare them to our soundscape evaluations and find out which ones of them are playing a strong role in helping us to predict the human evaluations. So why are we taking acoustic indicators at all? Well, because if we simply look at the decibel levels in the park, that doesn't tell us the whole story. So these are the LAEQs averaged over 1 hour with the dark red line. And you can see that over the course of the day from 9:30 a.m. to about 6:45 p.m., the decibel level in the park does not change by more than 1 dB, which is pretty interesting, because this park, it really changes its activities throughout the day. For the lunchtime, it serves as a place where people are gathering for lunch. In the evening, people are practicing their instruments in this park. And in the morning, people are passing through and on their commute. But really, if we're just looking at the decibel levels, it doesn't tell us that whole story. So that segues quite nicely into the fact that I've introduced this as a mixed methodologies talk. But so far, I've only talked about one of our methodologies, and that's collecting acoustic indicators through this environmental monitoring and periodic and triggered recordings. But we have a whole host of other methodologies that I'll introduce in a second. How will we accomplish all of these methodologies at the same time? Well, we've broken up our project into a few phases. So one of the nice points about this experiment is that hasn't really been done before, is that we have the opportunity to evaluate the soundscape before and after an intervention. In the soundscape community, this really hasn't been done. So we have the opportunity, before the music kiosk is installed on July 31st, to gather our indicators, and then to evaluate the park with questionnaires and observations of the people that are using it. On the 31st itself, we were hoping that the installation would be on July 15th so that everyone at this conference could see it, but things happen, and I'm happy that we're still installing it in 2015. Our new install date, for anyone who's still here, is the 31st of July. So on the 31st of July, we'll be doing some early user tests with the system finally in place, and we'll be having an opening day event and orientation, a little party in the park for the neighbors and friends of the music kiosk to show them how to use it and our plans for the next month that it will be installed in the park. And for the period of the 1st through the 31st of August, we'll be doing our post-installation study, where we repeat our pre-installation data collection and compare before and after the installation. So what do we want to collect exactly? So we have to go back to our research questions to find out exactly. So we're quite a large team, but we came out with a few research questions that we really cared to answer. They are: what are the appropriate development considerations for a technology like music kiosk? How does one best integrate public input into the design and evaluation of an outdoor music installation? What performance rules must be implemented to reduce the negative impacts of a device like music kiosk? And lastly, how will activities change around the introduction of music kiosk? For me, I call myself a soundscape researcher, and what I'm really interested in is the interaction between the activity that people are conducting in a place and how that gets evaluated in terms of its soundscape evaluation. So I promised I would come back to soundscape and what it is exactly. As I mentioned, the definition, which was recently standardized, is that it's the acoustic environment as perceived, understood, and/or experienced by people or society in context. So there are a lot of elements of this definition. The acoustic environment is pretty clear, I think, to everyone here. But perceived, understood, and/or experienced is the human evaluation component of the soundscape. Basically, if the tree falls in the forest, is anyone there to hear it? That's what this is. And then by people or society means that the people who are making the judgment can either be individuals or as a group. And then in context means that you have to consider what people are doing. I mentioned earlier that I'm interested in activities, and activities are one way that you can modulate the context. So I'd like to play some sound samples, just because. These are two urban soundscapes, and in one of them, I propose that you have the opportunity to conduct a lot of activities, and in the other soundscape, you do not have, let's say it would not afford you the opportunity to conduct those same activities. So I'll play the first one. No, oh, sorry. Oh, media not found. Too bad. Okay, so there were two sound files. I guess they didn't make it. One of them was just a noisy traffic scene, and it's rather urban, but it doesn't let you. It doesn't tell you that you should be doing anything there. The other is an outdoor dining area where people are talking nicely, and there's some music playing, and it's a rather nice urban scene. Too bad. So the soundscape. What is it exactly? So the decibel is the measure that we typically use to measure the urban environment, right? But the decibel only correlates positively with annoyance and negatively with pleasantness. So as the decibel rises, most of the time annoyance does rise. And as the decibel rises, most of the time the pleasantness goes down. But that's not always the case. It's much more complex than that. So it doesn't tell the whole story, and the human evaluations are very multifaceted. This is a new park in Lyon, and it's right next to kind of a noisy highway, and there aren't really any trees or anything in this park, but there are still hundreds and thousands of people that use it every day and make use of this park, even though it can be quite noisy. And they're doing restful activities like sitting and staying for a while, which is rather interesting. Like I mentioned before, if we take a look at our park, the decibel levels don't really change much over time. Maybe by one decibel. So this doesn't give us an indication of why people are using it for different activities at different times of the day. When it comes time to design or to talk about what soundscapes sound like, when we're talking about rural and restful soundscapes, like a park that people would leave the city to visit, these are rather straightforward problems to deal with. So you would want a low noise level, a low eventfulness, and you would want a soundscape that does not interrupt the resting activity. But there are lots of other activities that we would want to conduct in urban environments. For example, if we tried to reduce the decibel level of the famous Shibuya intersection in Tokyo, it would sound ridiculous. We want this place to be noisy. That's one of its resources. So definitely, as this intersection gets noisier, people see it as being more exciting, more urban, and more of a place that they want to be shopping and doing their activities. So I titled this slide, "When the Activity Changes, the Appropriate Soundscape Does Too." So when you're visiting this particular intersection, your context is a shopping activity or a dining activity. And so that new context means that you want to hear different soundscapes associated with that. And this, the best or the appropriate soundscape for this scenario is entirely different for the best or appropriate soundscape for this scenario. When the soundscape does not match the activity, some things happen and people stop using that particular space. So 20 minutes earlier, this had been a market, and it was lively, full of people conducting transactions and making shopping sounds. But some of the vendors closed, and suddenly everyone went away. And now, even for the one guy who's still open, the soundscape of this place doesn't give you the indication that you're in a market anymore. So in only 20 minutes, the soundscape of this place totally changed. And lastly, the last part of the definition of soundscape was that it had to take place in context. I was visiting Hamburg and I saw this sign and I thought this was really, really perfect for describing what soundscape is. What this reads here, so this was a big sign in front of a construction project as you were leaving the opera house. And it says, "Hear Hamburg's beautiful construction noise." So basically what the people who'd constructed this billboard were thinking was that the people who were at the opera generally are quite well involved in the city politics and probably know how to complain about construction noise and get projects stalled. So they wanted to make the opera goers happy, and they said, well, this construction noise is bringing a good economy to your city. It's bringing prosperity to your city. So please view this construction noise as beautiful construction noise, musical, beautiful construction noise, instead of simply something that's bothering you. And this is really how you can use context to influence the way that the same soundscape is evaluated. Just one more slide with soundscape pictures, but I hope I'm explaining the concept in a way that is useful. You can take a lot of quantitative information about the soundscape, but it doesn't always tell the whole story. So if we look at the above and below pictures here, if we talk about quantitative information about these two places, they're actually rather similar. So we have stone walls flanking either side of a four-story road. We have somewhat high-speed traffic going down both of these places, probably going about 30 or 40 kilometers an hour. We have tall trees. If it were the same season, they would probably both be leafy. It would be probably the same amount of leafiness. We have sidewalks on both sides of the streets. And there's probably, on the other side of these upper walls, there's probably residents as well. So if we talk about urban density, it's probably the same. Traffic speed and traffic volume are the same. The width of the road is basically the same. Sidewalks, yes. Trees, yes. But there's something very different about what these spaces are telling us. I'm guessing that most of you would have a preference for which road you would rather walk down. Is that right? Yeah, okay. So this is why we need to collect qualitative information about the soundscape. So quantitatively, these two places are rather similar, but in a qualitative sense, they're quite different. So how do we capture this qualitative information? Well, we can't do it only with acoustic indicators, so we have to bring in a host of other methods to accomplish these things. And this is what we're trying to do with Music Kiosk. So besides doing our recordings and collecting acoustic indicators, we will do an analysis of the system logs to see how long people are connecting to our device, what type of music they're playing, and what type of connections they're making. We're conducting observations in the park, so we have a specialist on our team who is a sociologist, and she will sit in the park for 2 hours at a time and collect observations from users and non-users of Music Kiosk and see how their activities change around the introduction of the system. We'll be conducting a questionnaire in the park, so we'll ask people before Music Kiosk is installed who are using the park, then we'll ask users of Music Kiosk, and then we'll ask park users who aren't using Music Kiosk to fill out a questionnaire evaluating the soundscape and see how each of their activities modulates their evaluation of the soundscape. And then lastly, for anyone who is, in terms of straightforward data collection, anyone who volunteers their email address for us, we'll be doing interviews with them to expand upon the data they gave us from their questionnaires. And we also have a specialist on our team who's doing a community outreach strategy to try to make sure that disadvantaged groups like elderly people who aren't so good with technology know how to use the device and don't feel excluded from the park. And there's also a city complaint hotline, and we've managed that anytime somebody makes a complaint about our system, it will actually go directly to us and we can deal with it directly. So I'm proposing that Music Kiosk operates as a soundscape research project. Soundscape concepts have been around for a while, but the ability to empirically evaluate real in situ interventions is rather uncommon. And this leads to some new research questions that take into account this the incorporation of the soundscape approach into this research project. Namely, can we design or change a soundscape to intentionally improve quality of life in an urban environment? And what are the appropriate methodologies for evaluating a musical soundscape intervention? So I've mentioned that we have all of these methodologies. Which one of them is going to be useful in telling us how the soundscape of the park has changed? There has been some work done in the past, and I'll just spend a minute telling you about them. I sort of hinted before that when urban planners are working with the city, they take an approach where they want to only reduce the number of decibels in the city. But hopefully I explained that was not the only good approach for good urban planning. Sometimes it's appropriate to have a high decibel level. But communicating the soundscape approach to urban planners can be rather difficult because of their noise reduction mentality. So we've had to spend a lot of time sort of working slowly with urban planners and getting them on board with the project and convincing them that even though we're adding decibels to their city, these are good decibels. These decibels will improve the quality of life. And I talk about this in a paper in 2013. I did a study with 20 urban planners. This was three urban planners, but it's since turned into 20, where we asked them about how they deal with noise in their city. And another study from 2005 talked to urban planners in France and compared the discourse that urban planners used with the discourse that regular city users use and showed that they talk about these things rather differently. So urban planners take a technical approach and they continue to want to take a noise reduction approach. As I also mentioned earlier, soundscapes are evaluated through the activities that are conducted within them. So as you change your activity, your evaluation of the soundscape and the things that you do inside of it are modulated. And when you incorporate soundscape methods into urban planning and design, it's possible to get better outcomes than if you only take the noise reduction approach. So we have, with the soundscape approach in mind, we have some new research goals that have emerged from the project. We're interested in evaluating methods of taking people's perceptions into account. This is exactly what soundscape is. And we want to use our environmental recordings to aid that understanding. So this is a hot topic right now in soundscapes. If you can find out that, for example, if you have a low traffic noise index that makes a really high pleasantness, then you can turn this into a regulatory information that urban planners can make use of rather quickly. And so that's one thing that we're interested in. Also, can we implement an unsupervised music installation to maximize quality of life and minimize negative impacts at the same time in the city? And we'd like to extend previous research on this topic outside of the laboratory to a real place with a real time frame. And this would extend our working theories on activity and soundscape. So I'll spend just a minute diving a little deeper into what exactly we cover on each of our methods. So I'll start with the questionnaires. As I mentioned, there are three types of questionnaires. We have a questionnaire that's done pre-installation and post-installation. And the post-installation questionnaire has two groups as well, and that's the user and the non-user of Music Kiosk. All of the questionnaires, which are bilingual, of course, because it's a French-speaking city, but there are many people who don't speak French, especially living in that neighborhood. We have Portuguese. It's a Portuguese neighborhood as well, so we give people the opportunity to fill it out in French or English. So all of the questionnaires include questions on park usage, like how frequently they use the park and what activities they use that park to conduct. We ask them to conduct a soundscape evaluation that has a 9-point soundscape evaluation of the pleasantness, eventfulness, familiarity, unpleasantness, appropriateness, and interestingness of the soundscape. So there are a lot of factors that we're considering to be the soundscape evaluation. We ask people about their mood states. We ask people about the sound sources that they can identify, and then we ask them to identify which of those sound sources are the predominant ones to them. We ask them questions about their noise sensitivity, because we have a hypothesis that for people that are less noise sensitive, they enjoy noisy urban parks more than people who are more noise sensitive. We ask them some demographic information. And then lastly, because I said this is a mixed method study, we're putting a timestamp at the bottom of our questionnaires, and we'll be comparing our acoustic indicators to the time of day that the people are completing these questionnaires. For the users of Music Kiosk, there'll be a further thing on the study about an evaluation of the actual device itself, usability and quality of the system, what activities they're concurrently conducting while they're in Music Kiosk. So are they playing live music, are they dancing, or are they using it for a picnic? And how did they discover Music Kiosk? And then for the non-users of Music Kiosk, so say people who are sitting away further on a bench, we ask them, do you like having Music Kiosk in this park, and would you want to use it yourself? So besides the questionnaire, we also have observations. I mentioned that we have a specialist on our team. She'll train us as well, so everyone will take turns, but we'll sit in the park for durations of about 1 to 2 hours and collect information about the activities that people are conducting before and after the installation. We'll see if people are removing their headphones to pay more attention to the real soundscape. We'll measure lingering behaviors, so perhaps people stop and pay more attention to what's happening in the park as they pass through, or they sit longer and stay longer. Maybe they take bigger group sizes to the park because it feels more like a community gathering place. And maybe the perceived ages that these groups are made up of will change as well. So these are all things that we're measuring through our observations. And then for our interviews, for the people who have given us their email addresses, we'll sit with them on a separate occasion, and we'll conduct a further personality questionnaire with them to get other things besides. So on our questionnaire, we're only collecting introversion or extroversion, but we're interested in other personality aspects as well. We'll ask them about their musicianship. We'll ask them about their perceptions of the Montreal urban quality and further the soundscape quality of Montreal, and whether they think that there are any sound marks in the neighborhood. A sound mark is a concept from Murray Schafer in the 1960s, and that's it's the sound landmark. So an example of a sound landmark in a typical neighborhood would be church bells, and they go off every Sunday morning, so that would be a sound mark. For me, some of the Montreal urban sound marks are the sounds of the fireworks every Wednesday and Saturday night, or the sounds of the outdoor circus festival playing the sort of the cheesy music that goes along with it. And so there are a lot of really nice ones, but we're hoping to see what the city tells us. Are there sound marks? And then we're interested in information about whether people perceive that there are members of disadvantaged groups. For example, maybe the Portuguese people will feel like other people are invading their park, and we want to know if they feel like they're losing their park as a result of this installation. Or maybe old people feel like the young people are using this technology that they don't have access to. So we have another person on our team is an urban planner, and she's really interested in these problems. So this mixed methods approach together, all of these methods together will give us a broader understanding of a lot of different things. First, how interventions will change the soundscape. Music Kiosk is going into the soundscape. It will change it. How does that happen? Next, when the soundscape changes, the activities will change. So how is a change in soundscape modulating a sound and a change in activities? How do people make soundscape evaluations? So we're collecting a lot of information about the different... We're using a lot of methods to take soundscape evaluations, and we want to see which ones are best capturing the changes that are happening in the Parque de Portugal soundscape. And then further, we're interested in understanding Parque de Portugal and its urban function. So this project is novel in the sense, and I talked about this already too, but in that simultaneously we are doing an in situ intervention and we're evaluating it. So we're able to manipulate a soundscape and evaluate its effects before and after. This is really hard because you have to work with the city, you have to play by their rules. We're working with the university, and you have to play by McGill's rules, and this takes a lot of diplomacy and planning, and it's been about a year in planning to make this happen. So when Music Kiosk is installed and working as we hope it should, there are a number of stakeholders who will benefit from the project. So we have our park users, and these people will benefit from having a new installation in their park. We hope that they'll experience an improved quality of life and that they'll have access to new activities that they had never conducted before. The city itself will benefit from new publicity about musical gatherings in their neighborhood. They'll maybe get a better understanding of how to create good places in their neighborhood, and they'll understand better what their residents want. And we, as the researchers, we will have rare access to this mixed methods approach, a pre- and post-installation study, and an in-situ evaluation. These things are all really valuable. So I've mentioned my team a number of times, and here everybody is. So I'm a PhD candidate in the School of Information Studies. I call myself a soundscape researcher, and I have a history in urban design as well. Catherine Guastavino is a professor, and she's my advisor. She's also a soundscape researcher and specializes in in-situ studies ecological validity, thank you, that's the word. So she specializes in ecological validity of soundscape evaluations. Jamie Cudmore is our community outreach specialist. She is an urban planner and designer. And Etta Bild is a visiting student from the University of Amsterdam who is our sociologist specializing in soundscape and human activities. We have a team from ETS who did the technological portion of the study. So Jeremy Voix is the professor there, and Louis Varreau is in the audience, and he did most of the hardware. We have an architect on the team, and we also have an elected counselor at the city who's supporting the project and guiding us through the bureaucratic process here at the Department of Sports, Culture, Parks, and Leisure. So that's everything I wanted to talk about, and I hope that you have questions about the soundscape, and I'm really happy to answer them and how we can use them in the future and to better understand our acoustic environments. So thank you. There's a lot of time for questions. Yes?
Is there a sort of objective dialogue that is in place in Montreal to sort of keep a handle on what you're doing, or you know, as a sort of a standard that people could complain against?
Yes. So the city of Montreal is. The only way that the city of Montreal deals with acoustics at the moment is through a complaint basis. So if you wanted to build a new project in the city, you don't even have to go through environmental approval of any sort. Basically, you do something, and then when people complain about it, that's when the city intervenes and stops things from happening. So that's actually a bit strange. So if people call and complain too much about our project, we may have to do something about it. There is one, but I think it's 75 decibels, and we won't be well. So we have an exemption for within the park to make that noise, and then because of our microphone, we'll know that we're not above that threshold at any point beyond our limit of our exemption. So the permit that we have from the city allows us to make whatever noise we want in the gazebo, but we've promised them that that if they measure it anywhere outside of the park, it won't be audible above the existing thresholds. And that's way below the regulation.
How close are the residents to the park?
Really close, actually. That was one of the first pictures. Okay, so this, imagine you're standing on this sidewalk. If you turn around, basically, in between that car and that tree, is the closest residence. So they're quite close, but that's why we've promised that not to be emergent at a distance above the noise level at a distance of 10 meters.
And the sound is actually going to be somewhat contained in the gazebo, or is it going to sort of extend outside it?
It's a hard floor gazebo, so there's probably going to be a lot of reverberation outside of the gazebo, but we're using four speakers so that we can keep the levels a little bit lower, and they're facing downward into the gazebo. We do expect that it will travel a little bit, but there are leafy trees all over the place, and there's grass, and it's sort of an active park already, and people are like playing their guitars on the benches already, so it's kind of the residents there are kind of used to it, and we actually talked to the residents, and everyone was actually quite happy about the idea, except one person. But we gave her our phone number, and she's fine. Yes?
At what point will you have a package that you could migrate to other cities?
That's a good question, and sadly, I deleted that extra slide from from the bottom of the presentation. So Louis here has designed a music kiosk light bulb. So basically the power will come, you could unscrew the existing light bulb that might exist at the top of the gazebo, and you could screw in a new music kiosk. And as long as you have speakers, then that's the whole system right there. So that's next year, music kiosk 2.0. And that hopefully that will turn into something. About the size of a floodlight is the idea for the next generation design.
From
Are you talking about this place?
Yeah. Exactly.
You know, they solved this problem about 2 weeks ago.
They did?
Yeah, it was only one resident who was complaining, and it was actually even only the boyfriend of the resident, so that person didn't even live there. And he was just calling every day to complain about it. But the owners of the building offered to move those people out. And after the city councilor, who is our promoter, she wrote a public letter telling them to accept the offer, and she gave all the details in the paper. She said, you should move out because the city is sort of done dealing with this. And so they finally accept, all over the Facebook pages for the community, they have pictures of the moving van of the one couple that was complaining moving out. And it has thousands of likes. It's really, it's quite special. But I think that was the only person that had been complaining about this particular venue. Otherwise, the communities, some of the local venues are getting louder and louder, but the Divan Orange is one of the good ones. So one of the what the city said was, okay, we can shut down the Divan Orange, but it's still zoned as a musical venue, and we have no control over who's going to occupy the place next, so it could be worse than what's there today. So this is one of the reasons so the city's sort of in a difficult place because Montreal is only able to deal with things once people start complaining about it. So that's why they have no control until after the new tenants move in. So they said, we can shut this place down, but that's no promise that things will get better. So those particular residents that have been complaining are now gone. But it's a neighbor immediately local to this neighborhood. It has a lot of musical heritage and a lot of tolerant residents that sort of like the neighborhood. In terms of giving Montreal residents more opportunities to complain, I don't know. There are a lot of complaints in the city. There's we have an island park in the middle of the river, and there's an adjacent suburban community who has tried suing the city of Montreal for all of the noise that they make every week during their festivals. But the Supreme Court announced this week that lawsuit is not eligible to continue. So the park is now allowed to keep making the musical noise that they have been, and the residents there, who are all very wealthy and will be just fine, will have to figure out something else. Yeah, it's very political and it's very interesting, but our humble little intimate installation, I don't know what trickle down effects it's going to have on the community, but that's why we're researching it. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
So there's no way of controlling the order if two people try to play something at the same time or things like that.
I'll let Louis answer that. Was there another question? Okay.
How are you storing and collecting the data?
Probably also best answered by him. It's a text file, basically.
Yeah.
But go ahead.
And powering is the other.
Ah, okay. Yeah, this was. We have a special hotspot where we can connect and refresh the drives. How big is the hard drive?
It's like 32 GB.
Okay, it's quite large. Well, if it's a text file with access to gigabytes, then not very often. But since we're collecting the periodic wave files, I think a week we calculated was the... But there will be researchers in the park a few times per week, so it will be fine, I think. Yeah, if a lot of recordings are triggered, maybe it will fill up faster. Sorry, there was one other question about the power. That was also quite difficult. This lamppost here. So there's one that's about half of that distance closer to our gazebo, and at the top of that lamppost is a plug. And they've told us that we can run a power cable through the air to the gazebo. So we just have to find a way to tension it on both sides. That was the best option. But yeah, the gazebo itself wasn't powered, so that was a big challenge. And the city actually thought that they would have to leave the lights on all the time in order for the power to come through, but we confirmed that that's not true. But that took a week to find out. Sorry, yes?
How are you making people aware of the system?
So we have a whole community outreach strategy, and the urban planner in our group is sort of the leader on that. So we have a Facebook page, a Twitter account. We just got word today that we have funding for our opening day party. So we're going to distribute flyers to the local residents, inviting them to the open day. Otherwise, there are people in the park all the time. So I think it will become visible besides that. But on Twitter, we already have followers, even though we haven't installed the system yet. Facebook, too, we already have followers. So we'll see what the outcome is after the first few days. But if
like the instructions, user instructions, that the site is using.
Yes, exactly. So there's a little bilingual panel saying that open up your Bluetooth and click on music kiosk, control the volume through your personal device, or connect to this audio jack and just play as you wish. And then there's the volume knob. And then there's a little disclaimer, like, we've been approved by the ethics board, thank you. And yeah. And then probably half of the time people are using it, they'll be approached by researchers asking them obnoxious questions. But there's also a Portuguese community center, and we've contacted them and given them free MP3 players, so that the old people who maybe don't have one can actually just borrow it. They can check it out from the community center. And we're preloading it with a bunch of Fado songs so that they can play it if they want. So hopefully that will have a positive effect, but our urban planner is more interested in those things, and that will have its whole extra research output. Yes? That's a good question. So yeah, they're quite high up, and even if you jumped from a ladder, you wouldn't get, you have to really bring some big equipment. The ceiling I showed is quite high up. And then beyond just it being really high, we're putting a screen in front of the speakers, like a perforated metal screen, so that you can't really tell what's there. And we're basically sort of assuming that anyone that knows that these are expensive speakers probably doesn't need to steal them. But we were quite lucky. So we have an urban planning contact who used to live on the park for 12 years. And she introduced us to all of the neighbors, including the homeless people. So she introduced us, and now there's a connection, and they're in the park quite a bit more often. So if anyone is coming to vandalize, we actually have people 24 hours a day in the park who are keeping an eye on the system for us. So we were actually happy to be introduced properly. It's a 1/4 inch, but with a 1/8 inch adapter just zip tied to it.
Attached to it.
Yeah. And we'll have a pile of extra adapters sitting around, okay, as they get stolen. Yeah, I guess that's one of the big things is there's some vandalism will happen. Hopefully, it's mostly just spray paint, but how will we deal with that? does the city deserve something this nice in their gazebo? That remains to be seen. But hopefully there will be some self-policing. Hopefully a support community will arise around it, and maybe, it's as much acoustic research as community research.